This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, it's 7:05 in the morning, Wednesday the 31st of March. And of course, you're listening to The Morning Run with Wong Xiaoling and Philip C. In about 15 minutes, we'll get into the state of Malaysia's FDI and whether we still have a competitive edge in the region. But before that, markets, how did they do, Philip?
Not so good. I think in the US, extended second day of losses following further bank warning losses. Dow and S&P 500 down 0.3%. Nasdaq was also down 0.1%. But actually over in Asia, unfortunately, back home in Malaysia, KLCA was down 0.1%. But rest of markets were up green. Nikkei was up 0.2%. Hang Seng up 0.8%. Shanghai up 0.6%. Singapore in positive territory at 0.5% increase.
So just us. As usual.
Just us only this time.
Okay. But for a view on where global markets are heading, we're going to be speaking to Jack Kuzi, Director for Strategy at VFS Group. Good morning, Jack. As usual, nice to speak to you. And I think we've got to ask you about this Archegos issue, because just as banks were getting back on their feet and it looked like it was good times again for them, Archegos may actually put them back on the ropes. Now, how much of an impact will there be for these financial institutions?
Good morning. What a question. What a loaded question.
It's very loaded. That's the way to go in the morning run.
Yes. Thank you so much. Look, I'm a frank and honest person, and I've always been frank. We've known each other for a long time now. I've been on this show for quite a while. I don't know. I mean, anyone that tells you they know, I mean, is guessing. I mean, there are so many opinions about what happened, why it happened. Is this a systemic issue? Is this a cordoned off issue? We just don't know. We're still unpacking what has happened, but you know, it smells like a rat. I mean, there might be a few more rats out there. It just goes to show that, you know, you've got these complex derivatives, these swaps, this anonymity in the market, and it can unravel very, very, very quickly. And it just shows, you know, the question I think that's facing investors, and then when you look at the bank's balance sheet and everything that's going on, is this an underlying systemic issue? Is there too much leverage in the game? I mean, you had a Viacom secondary listing that spooked the market, forced a margin call on someone that was banned for insider trading a decade ago, and you have this unraveling of this stock price and many other share prices around the market. And the question I ask myself is, what happens if this happens to a Tesla? You know, think about all the derivatives and overlayings that there's on Tesla and the swaps out there. What happens if something happens to a company like this? I mean, Viacom is a big company, you know, and I'm sure it's a great company and it's been around for a long time, but it's not one of the key companies. It's not one of the largest market caps out there. And if this can happen to something like Viacom with a $3 billion secondary listing that the market doesn't like, what happens if it happens to a big tech firm or something like a Tesla where there's so much leverage? So it's a very worrying time.
But Jack, will we ever know? Because all these derivatives that you referenced, I mean, they're all OTC. They're over the counter. We have no visibility on it at all, do we?
No, we don't. And that's kind of the reason why hedge funds and banks and you know, these family offices like these, is because you get that anonymity. You know, if you build up a big long position in the stock, you've got to declare that you own X amount so everybody can follow you. You know, if you're shorting a stock, you've got to declare that you're shorting. You can see, you know, we know the GameStop theory. With these swaps and these complex derivatives, they're hidden from the market. So you can get in and out, you know, under the veil of cover, if that makes sense. So we don't know. You know, we don't know. And what we do know is there was a massive margin call and, you know, the dominoes just kept tumbling. And in the end, you know, the retail guy gets caught up in the middle again. So, you know, I think the biggest question we need to ask ourselves right now, and I don't have the answer to this, I'm being quite honest, is there a bigger issue at play here? You know, could this unravel other boxes or other hidden, you know, markets within the market? And we just don't know. And I go back to the Tesla example, because if it was something like a Tesla, I think it would have been a bigger crash than we saw. And I think it goes back to this point about excess liquidity, easy money, cheap money, and we get situations like this.
So, Jack, when I listen to you, it sounds like there are going to be many rats and it's an iceberg, essentially. Many failures you can attribute to perhaps regulation, risk management, excessive leverage. In your view, right, Will banks be tightening and apply more stringent KYC? Do you think they're going to be more cautious moving forward in terms of placing more of these kind of traits or even other types of similar traits?
Yeah, I definitely think they're going to, you know, relook at who they're allowing, you know, to take up such leverage in stock and push stocks up a lot. But, you know, it's a slow mover, isn't it? It's a bit of a lag effect, you know, it's a bit about maybe it's too late. So, yeah, you could see a little bit more unwinding here as some of these big banks and investment banks start to work out, well, you know, we don't want to be a Nomura. We don't want to be a Credit Suisse. You know, look at someone like Credit Suisse. They've been hit hard in the last couple of days, last couple of months. You know, they've got the Greensill saga, now this saga. So, yes, you're probably going to see a little bit tightening up. What I will say in defense of some of these banks is that, you know, there's been talk of the CDO, CDI issue that we had in 2007, 2008, 2006. They are much more, their balance sheets are much better. They've got less risk on the table. But yeah, you could see some more tightening up and starting to look at their internal controls in spite of what's happening. And they're taking more losses as we go along. It's just, you know, what are the weight of the losses? We actually don't know. So it's a bit of, you know, maybe too late, too little too late, but they'll definitely look at their procedures going forward. No doubt about that.
But at the end of the day, Jack, does this mean that you're not going to be a buyer for banks at this moment?
Look, I think, you know, we talked about this maybe 4 or 5 months ago. I did like the banks at that point of view. They have run hard and long. You know, I guess the question we need to ask ourselves there in the banks is, do we think the yield curve is going to continue to rise? You know, where do we think the 10-year rate is going to be, and where is inflation going to be? If you are a proponent of inflation and long-term inflation in the market, then you want to own these banks because they generally do well out of that. But at the moment, I'm in a sit and wait approach, you know, which is kind of where this market is kind of trending at this point in time.
Let's just shift to something a bit more lighter and happier, China tech. Okay. Baidu, Bilibili recently conducted their secondary listings. What's your trend on future China tech IPOs?
I mean, let's just talk about China tech in general. It's been hit very hard. If you look at something like the K-Web, which follows, you know, China's new internet, you know, from the top in February, mid-February, you're down almost 35, nearly 40%. So China tech in general has been, you know, the victim of a massive sell-off. Now, that's broader reasons. I think they're different reasons to what we're seeing in the US. In relation to Chinese companies dual listing or secondary listing or even just IPOing simply within the Asian sphere, I think you're going to continue to see a trend of that. It'll be interesting to see where ByteDance goes, whether they look to list in America or look to do a listing in Hong Kong and the STAR market within China. But this is something that we saw in the Trump era and we've seen post-Trump era, this decoupling of the US and China markets. So I think this is a long-term trend, and there are a number of reasons. You've still got a Cold War being played out by the two economies. It's probably getting a little bit more fiercer and more strategic with the Biden administration coming in. But you also have the ability of these Chinese companies to raise money locally. So they don't feel the need to go to the US to raise this type of money. They can do it in secondary or just new listings within the Asian sphere. So this is part of a broader long-term trend, and we expect to see it going forward. And when you talk about Bilibili and Baidu, it's kind of like the Barber playbook we saw from 2 years ago, raise money to continue to grow and build their markets going forward. So I expect to see this going forward for sure.
And very quickly, Jack, I mean, since you mentioned ByteDance, it's said to be valued at $250 billion in private trades in the secondary market. I mean, what do you think about that kind of valuation?
It's cheap.
Cheap?
$250 billion US dollars cheap.
Yeah, it's cheap. And let me tell you why. ByteDance is an incredible company. It's not only is it well positioned within the largest single market in the world. You talk about short video. You talk about, you know, they're moving to e-commerce. They are, think of them as like a junior Tencent, but with, you know, a big set of muscles and that's been training in the gym for a long time. They are hitting Tencent everywhere they can. This is a Tencent ByteDance battle going on at the moment. They're getting into music, streaming. They've got foreign, you know, markets. You know, you talk about TikTok around the world. This is a conglomerate, a very well-run conglomerate, one that's got a lot of cash, one that's looking to really take over and become the predominant Chinese company in the world. You talk about Barber's troubles. I think they're going to still continue to have troubles. They are going for the jugular and they are going for Tencent, and they are following that model, but they seem to be a little bit more dynamic and they seem to be a little bit better in what they're doing. And here's the thing about where we talk about technological trends and we talk about communication and how we get our data. Short video is the mover, right? Mm-hmm. That is the biggest driver of how we consume and release data. And they are way out ahead. You talk about Kuaishou, which is kind of their little brother. Don't even compare them because they are bigger and better than Kuaishou. And we've seen what that price has done. I mean, I know it's come off a little bit. So at a $250 billion valuation, in my opinion, even in the midst of this broad sell-off in China tech, which I think we're at the end of, this is cheap.
Okay, thank you for your time, Jack. That was Jack Kuzi of VFS Group telling us ByteDance is cheap, $250 million. Just go for it.
Because, billion.
Because short form social media is the way to go. You know, that's really something that's just starting to get hot and probably will get hotter and hotter. It's the favorite way people are consuming social media.
Actually, if you go and scroll social media like Instagram, I don't even look at the pictures. I just go straight up to the short video postings.
Do you?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we'll be watching this space very closely. I do want to see how it does. What kind of demand will it be? Or will it be another Ant Financial where the IPO suddenly dies towards the end? Who knows? But up next, does Malaysia still have a competitive edge in the region when it comes to FDI? Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.